Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
With us for our Monday morning doctor's appointment this week, we have family medicine physician at Northwestern Delnor Hospital in Geneva, Dr. Santina Wheat. Doctor, welcome to the broadcast. Good to have you with us. Let's talk first about what may help people with hypertension, a modified DASH diet. What exactly is that?
Good morning. I'm so glad to be here. So a modified DASH diet is a way that we talk about what you can eat. It really looks at having increased fruits and vegetables. It has you eating things that decreases the salt, all things that we know help you bring down your blood pressure so that you can potentially not take medication or decrease the medication that you're taking every day.
The villain here is salt, isn't it?
It really is, and that's not just the salt that maybe you add to your food every day. It is more the salt that we're seeing in processed foods. So a lot of the key behind this diet is really trying to get as fresh food as possible.
So now they're calling this diet a modified DASH diet. Explain why.
I think it's just a little bit more friendly in how we're eating it. It's not quite as challenging as the strict DASH diet used to be. And it also takes into account people with other conditions like diabetes so that you can have more options as well.
Got it. The FDA approved a new 3-in-1 combo pill for high blood pressure. This sounds like a good option, is it?
I think this is really exciting to see. Anytime we have the option to decrease the number of pills that someone is taking, it makes it so much easier to control. The biggest challenge that I have with my patients is when I have to add a new medication to them, they get overwhelmed by that number of pills, worrying that they're going to drop one. If they're packing things up, will a dog get it off of the floor or something like that? And yeah. So having just one pill when you can attack the blood pressure in three different ways is wonderful. I'm really excited to see this coming out.
At what point do you tell a patient to try to get more exercise, change their diet? And at what point do you say it's time to go on medication for your high blood pressure?
So I always start with diet and exercise first. That is always the first recommendation, whether it's for blood pressure, whether it's for diabetes. That is always part of the plan. The medication comes next. I usually give them about 3 to 6 months, depending on where their level is. But even if we start medication, it's still diet and exercise going along with it.
Yeah, our blood pressure normally gets up there a little bit higher as you get older, and that would be normal, wouldn't it?
It does. We know that physiologically our vessels get a little bit harder, and so it is normal for that to go up over time. But we still do want to keep it low enough that it doesn't cause other damage.
There was an interesting new report from the CDC about excessive drinking linked to a jump in high blood pressure deaths during the pandemic. What's behind this?
I think this is really interesting. One is we do know that alcohol causes a lot of problems, including increases in blood pressure. And so that is part of the diet that I will recommend when we see increased blood pressures is decreasing alcohol. But during the pandemic, we really did see increases in alcohol use in general. We saw increases in alcohol use because of stress, because people were staying home more often and not doing some of the other things that might have decreased the alcohol that they were having. And so, unfortunately, I'm not surprised to see this based on the uptick in alcohol that we saw in general.
With patients who have high blood pressure or are dealing with increased high blood pressure over time, do you recommend no alcohol?
We don't know what a safe limit of alcohol is. So in general, not having alcohol is the best choice. But past that, I do recommend trying to decrease alcohol in general for not just those with high blood pressure, but just in general.
And for the people who check their blood pressure with the machine, maybe at the grocery store, is that accurate?
It can be accurate, but there are ways that you have a better chance of getting a good blood pressure, and that's to make sure that you've been sitting down with your feet flat on the floor, that you're in a comfortable position, and you really need to sit for a few minutes before you take that blood pressure. So when you rush in and sit down and take it, that's going to be higher than what it really is.
No surprise that older people often fall and sometimes break a hip, but according to a new federal report, and this is very alarming, deaths as a result of the falls are increasing. What do you make of this report, Doctor?
I thought this report was very interesting. It doesn't really have a causation to it. Some of this really could be that we are understanding a little bit more the impact of the falls on our older population. But it is a cause for alarm. We do really need to be cautious in making sure that we are making areas as safe as possible, that we are providing support for our older people so that they are not falling, and making sure that the medications that they're taking aren't necessarily the cause for falls as well.
From 2003 to 2023, the death rates from falls rose more than 70% for adults 65 to 74. The rate increased more than 75% for people 75 to 84, and more than doubled for seniors 85 and older. And you have to wonder what's going on, because that's quite a spike, isn't it?
It is a big spike, though it is hard to say if the way that we evaluated it changed, if the way we determined that those deaths were because of falls changed. And so that could be part of it.
Mm.
We do also know that something was included in this, like if someone fell and hit their head, that might not have been attributed to the fall before. It might have been attributed to the hematoma. And so that's just one way that this could have been counted.
Yeah, good point. This sounds like good news. People with diabetes, severe diabetes, diabetes cured in a trial of a new drug. Tell us about this.
I am really excited to see this. This is for patients who have type 1 diabetes, which is often coming on early in life. And so these are people who have to use insulin from a very young age throughout life and be very cautious. And so this study demonstrated that there might be this cure with a stem cell transplant. And it sort of is regenerating the pancreas cells. And those are the cells that we need to make insulin, which is what patients with type 1 diabetes don't have. This could be very exciting. There are, of course, some risks to it. They did have to take immunosuppressants during the study, but I'm excited to see what else comes out of this. This could be really game-changing for patients with diabetes.
It was a small trial, though, wasn't it?
Exactly, which is why we really do need to see more information, see patients that are of a bigger group to see what, make sure there's no other side effects that we have to worry about.
You seem to hear more about people with diabetes now. And is it sugar? Or once you have diabetes, you have to watch your intake of sugar. But can too much sugar lead to that problem?
So it can, not for the type of diabetes that we're seeing in this study. This study is more for when your body attacks your pancreas cells. But for the diabetes that we are seeing more of, it really does have to do with our increasing weight, our changes in our diet in this country. There is definitely a need to decrease the amount of sugar that we're having in our diets overall, especially the added sugars. But there's so much that we can do with healthy lifestyle and then some of the medications available.
Yeah, this drug, this new drug we're talking about, is connected to type 1 diabetes. Can you explain the difference between type 1 and type 2 diabetes?
Absolutely. So in type 1 diabetes, the pancreas stops making insulin. And insulin is the hormone that our body needs to use the sugar that comes into it. In the type 2 diabetes, you usually still have some insulin that your body is making. It's just not using it well enough. And so this trial really is to stimulate it so that the body can make insulin again.
Got it. And finally, our staff is very interested in this new research about napping. Can you talk about this a little bit? Because this doesn't sound good. Midday naps may be a warning sign of poor health.
Yeah, I didn't like this headline either. I love my naps. But yeah, so what this study was talking about was that naps can actually be a clue that something else is going on. And so it's not saying that naps are inherently bad, but if you are never someone that needed naps and all of a sudden you are, it might be a clue that something else is going on. And so it's important to remember that you need about 7 to 9 hours of sleep every night. And if you don't get that together, it's okay to take a nap, but it won't be as restful as the full night would have been.
Yeah, I'm glad you're explaining this a little bit, because you read about this new study, and it was middle-aged and older adults. And the takeaway from this, if you don't get deeper into it, is that daytime napping, particularly around the middle of the day, for some reason, and that's when we like to take a nap, is linked to a higher risk of death from any cause. That's an alarming headline. And based on what you're saying, it's a little misleading, isn't it?
It is really alarming and a little bit misleading. The study goes on to say that they can't say a cause. They are saying that it's a warning sign. And so it is more the symptom and not actually the cause of what's happening. So it's worthwhile, if you're not sleeping well and need a nap during the day, to figure out what's going on in the rest of your life.
Yeah, if you're up before the sun, there's the reason you're napping, and a good one,
yeah,
isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
And you hear about this, get 8 hours of sleep, or at least 7 to 9. And I have heard that this varies widely among people. Doesn't it really depend on many factors, how much nighttime sleep you actually need?
It absolutely does. And the 7 to 9 is really just an average. But if you are someone that is getting much less than that and finding that you need a nap, then it might be time to consider, can I shift my schedule to go to bed earlier?
Right. I'll be thinking of you when I take my nap today. Dr. Santina Wheat, Northwestern Medicine. Thank you. Have a good one.
Thanks. Take care.